Hello, good evening. Welcome to 300, the RC Racing Podcast. We're back again with a episode a bit sooner than we had last time because it had been absolutely ages. I'm your host, Pete Lyons from Schumacher Racing, and I have my long-suffering co-host, Alexander Haywood, also on the show with me. Say hello, Alexander.
Hello, Peter. How's it going?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well. Excited to be back with another show.
And
we are very, very excited that tonight it's a bit of a special show because we don't do this very often. We have special guests with us. We have two guests, actually, on the line. We have all-round engineering genius Tony Stark-to-be Tristram Neal on the phone. Say good evening, Tristram.
Hi. Well, first of all, thank you. That's a very nice thing to say. And it's Tony Stark slash Elon Musk I'd like to go for.
I see. Innovation. So innovative.
Spaceships and stuff, electric cars and PayPal. So let's go with that.
Limits none is
That's
what
right.
I would say. Limits Goals. None. So lovely to have you on the show, Tristram. We also have the Dominator. None other than
None other.
Hint. Top quality puns on this show. We have Dominic Nunn on the line. Quality. Say good evening, Dominic.
Are you all right?
Yes, we are very well. We are very well. So everyone listening, our many listeners in the UK and abroad, we have three Schumacher people on the call, including myself, and one from AE. We are Alexander Haywood. We are. It's nice to have you on. It's a bit of a special show, really, because we don't often have guests, do we, Alexander?
No.
So it's nice that we're having one. It's something we'll do from time to time, for sure. And to have Trish O'Neill.
It happened one time only. I can't comment.
Tristram Neal on is a privilege. It really is. And
it's a privilege to be here.
Thank you.
Cheers, Trish.
And Dom. And I mean, what more of an exciting way to open up with than to say, well done for Tuesday night at Silverstone, Tristram. You won the club night, I believe.
Hashtag 13.5 Blinky.
Exactly.
I'm going to add into that one.
No,
it was good fun actually because I don't know, you want to say something? I'll give you.
No. I was going to say that Alexander has been worked up into a frenzy. I think to talk about this, so I'm going to let you explain, Tristram, and then I'm sure Alexander will pipe up.
Yeah, so it would be the classic thing. People are like, oh, why are you running 13.5 Blinky? Like, kind of the whole, the stock, and everyone hates stock, all these things. And what it is because I go to the EOSs, and I was watching the guys that feature in the A there for the stock class. And when they race modified, I'm not too far away from them, and thinking, I fancy a bit of that. And I don't really feature if I make a B or a C final. Then obviously no one's that interested. But if I could make the main in the US, you know, that'd be something. It kind of excited me, something new, something different. My skills aren't exactly getting better. I'm 33 years old now. I could probably do better if I put the time in. And I just thought, new little goals, new things to learn about as well. The stock market is super popular in the States. And that's where I thought, let's learn a bit more about it. So then I can always help those guys when they send me questions, if they want to ask me anything, that is. So based on what we're doing at the company, obviously trying to help customers, we've got a little lockout slipper eliminator set for the lay down and various other things to get us going quickly. I thought I'd learn. So I've been having to really man up, and at a meeting, when there's some guys that you're thinking, I could beat you if I just had some power. And I'm battling away, and you're having to make use of cornering ability and getting better at it and maintaining corner speed and optimizing your settings, so your gear ratio and the timing on the can. I'm not running boosted, so it's pure Blinky mode, so there's no extra horsepower available, so you've just got to make use of the speed you've just generated. So for me, doing that has been really good fun, and I made the A final last week on Tuesday, which on a club night, you'd be like, well, it's just an A final. But the guys that during the winter series are there on Saturday.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, actually, I beat quite a few guys into the A. And that was cool. And then last night, Charlie was there. So me and Charlie, I get really well with Charlie. Didn't expect to beat him, but I qualified behind him. Second, he was first. I gave him a load of pressure. He messed up. I got past and he didn't manage to catch back up due to just trying it a bit too hard. And my lap times were good enough. And so I chuffed the bits of it. And it was a very satisfying, enjoyable evening, really, if I'm honest. A pleasure to drive a car with actually so little power and concentrate. And let's get these corners dialed, because I don't normally do that. Normally I have too much power, can't control the car, and I don't always have the best night.
Yeah.
I think for our international listeners, that's Charlie Ware that yes. Trish is referring to. He's a very fast indoor driver. And Alexander, sorry, you were about to chip in just then about your theories for your hideously overpowered cars that you drive.
It's funny because I was talking to you about this earlier in the week, wasn't I, Pete? We obviously planned the podcast and we knew this was going to be a topic. But yes. I wondered, and I spoke to you and I said, do you think we have too much power for indoors? And I'm not talking about straight line speed down the straight, because obviously when you have a track like Silverstone, you do have quite a long straight. So you want the horsepower down there really to kind of, so you don't lose any time. But generally on the infield, obviously this weekend we did, I did the Silverstone Winter Series on Saturday, which is good. And I did the Dudley Series on Sunday, which is good fun.
Yes.
But I found for both tracks, I was taking speed off the cars, especially on the infield, taking all the boost off the car, just try and calm the car down. Obviously, two very different surfaces in Silverstone and Dudley. Dudley's a prima felt, like a slippier carpet, whereas the Silverstone track is super, super grippy. So, yeah, my theory was, do we have a slower car for indoors because A, we have the grip, or B, we don't have the grip and we want the car to kind of hold onto the traction it has got, and then just have a bit of speed for the straight. And I find it quite interesting to hear that Trisha made the A with a 13.5. Because I was wondering whether we are... I was wondering whether we are too quick.
Yeah, I think it's a question of us... I did this with Robin. I helped get his car going for him. Got him a little lay down sorted. Off he went. Had a really nice time. Did quite well. And as the weeks went on, he started struggling. But he'd been turning his power up. And then I went to check the settings because Zalowski was over. Robin's car, and I checked the settings, and it was like I wouldn't run them myself. And when I speak to Robin, he goes, "Oh, I like the power," and I was like, "Yeah, but it's kind of not good for you. It's like having a Mini with a Ferrari engine in it. It ain't gonna go in a straight line very well. And when you get to a corner, forget about the corner. You just worry about the bush. It's that kind of thing."
Yeah,
naughty Robin, turning up his power there, naughty.
We're talking about Silverstone in particular. The grip is, as you know, is extremely, extremely high. It's super, super grippy. So what I found on Saturday was I turned a lot of the boost off, a lot of the kind of initial punch off the speedo to try and just keep the car as calm as possible through the infield. And had the turbo come in at full throttle almost straight away for the straight. So I had hardly any boost, but quite a lot of turbo to keep the speed down the straight. And for me, that made the car a lot easier to drive. And ultimately actually gave me faster lap times because it was easier to hang on to. So do you reckon, Pete, we have them too quick then, you say, for the indoors? Like you say, Robin turned his down. Well, Robin had turned his up and found it hard to drive.
Certainly. I mean, it's quite amusing for Dom because Dom's like a rocket most times I see him. So this is probably nothing at all, anything he understands. I will say, that I did have this conversation with you. And for anybody who doesn't know, which there might be some out there, Silverstone's now running on CRC carpet, I believe it is.
Same as Las Vegas.
Yes, it's almost like a black velour. So rather than your grey EOS-style carpet, it's a black velour. There's virtually no give in it whatsoever. Mm. So I'd been having this conversation with... the man like Hayward, I said, I wondered, I was vilified for this by Lloyd Story. I said, I wonder if like an 8.5 with turbo on might be easier on the twisty, turny bits and then have some power for the straight. I then got a man up conversation from Lloyd.
Look in the mirror.
Yeah, but I still wonder, and... I think you could argue there with Tristram winning the A final, there is an argument there to be had that potentially on CRC, that precision through the infield could actually be an advantage. It sounds daft to say it, but it could be an advantage to have.
Yeah, well, I spoke to Halliwell about it today, he was saying that there's two examples, and one is, look at Neil Craig's car. It's never the fastest car on the straight, and he just keeps that average speed up and does very well. Whereas he said when he talked to Nathan Waters, run it fast because it's free speed, and it's kind of like, fine, but I pointed out to James, I'm like, but if the guy can't control it, get into the corner, it's well enough for those guys saying that. But there's a lot of guys that kind of, they do this as a hobby, they go just club night racing, and they're wondering why they're struggling to not either flip the car over or even make the apex. And it's like, you'd go way faster if you just backed off. And because they're not responsible enough to back off, they need to turn things down. They can have turbo for the straight. There's nothing stopping them going a million miles an hour. But just on the torque end of things, just back off.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, on a slight aside, when I was at Worksop with Abe this week for the Schumacher Masters, for the very famous series for international listeners, it's quite unusual Worksop series in that it's on like a cork floor, and we use the Schumacher honeycomb tire on there, so it's not carpet. It's like a rubberized cork, so it's quite unusual, but it's quite slippery. So all of my settings were off, and it was all about precision in the corners. So that's just a similar sort of idea, but on a different surface. Alexander, sorry, I think you were going to chip in with something.
Yeah, so Dudley was similar on Sunday. I guess not as low a grip as Worksop, but on the Primafalt carpet, you definitely have less grip than you had at, say, Silverstone or on the equivalent EOS carpet. In practice, went out with a 7.5, and the car felt fine, felt really good, nice and easy to drive, but it was I noticed it was wheel spinning everywhere. Pretty much just sort of kind of unpowering generally. I had turned things down as well, that was with a 7.5 turn motor. So for round one, I took the 7.5 out, put an 8.5 in, turned all the boost off, just had it kind of like standard, but then put some turbo on for the straight, as we've been mentioning. And it was amazing. It's the best the car has ever felt at Dudley, and I've raced there the last couple of years. Had just tons of grip, tons of forward grip, plenty of steering. It was so much more controllable. And it was all about the precision line. So you're taking the lines around the corner and carrying the speed rather than kind of pointing the squirts on that carpet. And it was so much better with an 8.5 in, to the point where you wonder whether you can actually go even slower. Especially, like I said, for the infield, it's quite a small twisty track, Dudley. The straight's not particularly big, but if you put a bit of turbo on for the straight, can you get away with a 10.5? Or similar? I think it'd be interesting to find out.
Yeah, well, I think it's...
Sorry, go on, Trish. I should shut up.
All it is like, if I went to, let's say, Trenton at Hoodie, they've got... It's a bit more like a larger circuit, so you have lander jump, corner, straight. So therefore, you now need the power. You can't get away with running, like, have a less torquey motor. So then you're just going to overheat the hell out of this one. Whereas our club racing, we have these traditional tight, small, twisty tracks, where that's probably the most, the application comes in. So obviously anyone listening don't think, well, what are you on about? Like, I need loads of power. So, well, yeah, you probably do for these larger tracks, but for these smaller tracks, which have only got a long straight and then tight little corners, you're going to be all right on a little bit less power.
I'm convinced, actually. Sure. I'm convinced that it's something that I think I shall try. Running something slightly slower than the usual 6.5 that I run. We'll see. I certainly think there's the proof. Yeah. So a bit, I think that's certainly worth exploring. I mean, what did you say General Drescher runs at Dudley?
I believe he ran the year... was it last year? I think he ran a 10.5, and he dominated, like, fastest lap and everything. If you watched him, he didn't look fast, but his car, again, it just generated the grip, whereas we were kind of looking a bit more racy with the car kind of squirming around a little bit and sliding around the corners a bit more and putting the power down harder. Craig just ran a 10.5, and it just had so much grip. It was just awesome everywhere. I think we just had too much power for that particular track, and he dominated with a 10.5. Beat all of us.
Like a Yoda moment.
Yeah.
Fast I am.
I like Star Wars. Haywood knows nothing about Star Wars.
Yoda's this little green dude that's pretty awesome with spiky ears.
Oh,
that's
no, right. Yeah, I'm not that blinkered to
I'm
Star Wars.
I'm joking, I guess that you probably...
he has come across Star Wars, listeners, he has.
I've heard one of the many name. Films.
Yeah, it's one of many films he's never seen, I should imagine. As any of our long-time listeners will know that most films... Although he has seen Blood Diamond. As one of my favourite films, he has seen Blood Diamond, but that's a story for another time. So, yeah. Dom, I don't suppose getting you onto a 13.5 is happening anytime soon, is it?
No, it's definitely not happening. But, I mean, all next season, I was running an 8.5.
Yes. What was I didn't quite hear what you said just then. What season was it you're running an 8.5?
Yeah, this past outdoor season, the national season. I've been running an 8.5. Okay.
Oh, right. In two-wheel drive?
Yeah, in two-wheel drive.
Oh, that's interesting. Because your car doesn't look, again, particularly slow.
No, definitely not. It's just, you just turn a load of timing on the top end of it. So.
Yeah. So what made you choose to run that then?
Well, we originally started running it in the wet and then having a 7.5 for the dry and a 6.5. But then we realised that actually the 8.5 was plenty gutsy enough. So we just carried on using it. So first national at Robin Hood this year, we ran it as well as pretty much all the other nationals.
Yeah.
I think it was only maybe Stockfold where we ran the 7.5.
Yeah, that's interesting. So that just kind of goes with our theory we've been talking about in terms of having motors which are too quick, but yeah, for the outdoors as well.
Yeah, I think that is a really interesting observation. I'm not sure how Abe will take that if I try and tell him, I'm just going to slow you down, son. because anybody who knows him will know, when you get the Abe sidelong glance of death and he looks at me and he'll say to me, you haven't slowed it down, have you?
Oh. I'll say,
no, I haven't. Because he always thinks that I'm going to try and sort of like tinker with his car and the power to sort of give him less power. But he's such a throttle jammer at times. There's times when I think that it can be a good thing to have it. But he certainly does enjoy having it there when he can use it. And I obviously at his age as well, the reactions do count. Because I'm being one of the grandees of RC racing at age 45. when you're 12, your reactions are certainly going to count for something, I think, with correcting little errors and so on and so forth. But no, a very, very interesting segment that, I think, and certainly something that I think we should all look into more, he says, sagely. It's like Jerry Springer's final word, isn't it? I should be sitting on a stool giving advice now. Let's all look into 8.5s.
Podcast is going to get slated for this.
I know.
People are going to be like, oh, did you hear that? That's a load of rubbish.
I know. Well, should we start talking about tie wear?
Oh, let's talk about...
yeah, let's do a talk about
tie wear.
That
gets everyone going.
Yeah.
We're
not talking about tyres.
No, I just believe I saw Sean Garrett's ears prick up from about 45 miles away at the mention of tyre wear. No, what I was going to say was that you'll have less tyre wear because you won't be wheel spinning.
Yeah.
And I don't care. I don't care what anybody says. The proof of the pudding is that you won on a competitive Tuesday night at Silverstone with an 8.5, correct? Or a 10.5?
And it was 13.5.
No, 13.5.
Even
13.5 and tyres from the week before as well. And that's no longer.
And tyres from the week before, exactly. Yep. So anybody complaining about tyre wear, I know that Silverstone's great for it now with the CRC because I've run tyres there on a club night that aren't new, that have done at least two runs elsewhere. And so I've gone there and I've had no problems. So, yeah, that's definitely something that I'm going to be exploring. Lloyd is probably now cringing, thinking, oh, my God, no. Well, one of the things that I wanted to broach with someone as experienced as yourself in engineering, Trish, is that since I've joined the team, I've been extremely impressed with the non-stop development at Schumacher Racing, where the whole focus of the company and of the team is winning races. I think that's fantastic. I really do. I'm sure it's the same at other manufacturers, but speaking from my experience at Schumacher, everything is geared up to win. So save yourself or Michael or Jorn, think of something or find something out or experience something at a race where we need to improve the car. You guys go away and immediately start working on whatever that is to make it win. So nothing stands still. So I've been extremely impressed about that. I know I've spoken to Alexander about it and he's been very impressed with it. I wouldn't allow him not to be, basically. But how is that worked through? Can you give us a bit of inside information and a bit of an insight into that?
So if you could bear with my rambling. So basically, we are a business at the end of the day and we need to make money. That's one part of it. So obviously, good product that wins, easy to work on, right price, being in stock, all these things are necessary. That's kind of like all part of that business plan. But when you get to know everyone, you get to know Robin loves the racing. He's the MD and he wants us to do well, partly because he's loved it all his life. Yes. Schumacher started up because Robin wanted to go racing. He went with his dad. They had silicon greased, like, you know, silicon piped out stuff, you know, sealant on like these little plastic rims to be tires on these village halls and stuff like that. And the cars are spinning out because they only had these spools on them. And Cecil was like, well, I've got an idea. So he comes along and he makes this thing called a ball diff. And obviously then Robin's mates start buying them all at the club and stuff like that. Next thing you know, they set up in the garage, they get it going. And then this business starts. Cecil stops his job at Cosworth at the time. He was doing transmissions and stuff like that. And off he went, you know, where he went. And so there's been a history through the company of wanting to win races. Cecil loves racing. He races these kind of 1940s, 1930s sports cars. I think it's Talbots and stuff like that. I'm not an expert on these things, but he loves it. And whenever he comes in and he comes in, I've heard great things. And he talks to me about the racing and stuff like that's been going on. And I tell him what kind of developments we've been doing. There's a lot of passion through the company about that we want to win and what do we need to do. So for my part, being R&D, it's kind of right. We need to be winning these races. What do we need to do that? First of all, we need a driver. And that's where we've got Michael, Jorn, Danny, Tom, Ellis. We've now got Corporal, Crompton, Dom, and I'm going to misname Pew and Lloyd, and we could just reel them off. We've got a lot of good guys at the top working their way down through the hobby guys, and it's great. And they all want the good stuff. They see B6s going around. They see the car shows, Yokomos. We've got the PR, the X-Ray. I don't know what I've missed, but that kind of covers it. We need to be beating them. And there's always grass is greener situation going on. So I need to come up with an idea that is better than the others or as good as, if not better. It's this case. So we go to an EOS and there was a case where we had the I think KC, we started going around and we got to the meeting and suddenly X-Ray had done something differently. And they're going much quicker. What were they doing? And we didn't know what they were doing, but we had to go quicker and right, let's do a little bit less towing. Let's do this, let's do that. I think at the time we're only running 2.5 degree towing, like at this early stage of knowing what we'd be doing. And went down to 1.5 and that's freed the car up, doing things outside the box. I'm diverting from the question a bit, but in regards to us trying to do what we're doing the best that we can, I've got a lot of passion for creating possibly the best car in the world. So we can achieve that at the EOS, we can achieve that at nationals, at other international events, at the worlds, you know, we can try our best and do the best that we can there. And so I've got my own personal goals of I want to be known for doing, you know, one of the best cars, or if not the best car. And so I've got my own goals. Robin's got his goals. He wants us to win, but he also wants us to make money. So we need to do this at an affordable level. And obviously not spend millions of pounds developing stuff. And so it's like when we did the X-ray factory tour, they've got all these tons of machines and stuff like that. And you're like, whoa, like how on earth is this yeah. working out? Like, come on, like one of these machines cost a fortune and they've got loads of them. And so not trying to get controversial on it, but it was kind of like, we're competing with them. And so when we do beat them, that's awesome. You've got the powerhouse of Associated with long time history, you know, obviously as long as Schumacher, if not longer, I'm not sure the times of when, who and what started. But they've got a lot of good drivers, a lot of experience, big backing of Thunder Tiger behind them. I think that they're going to basically own them. And they run all that. And it's kind of like, wow, okay. So, but we can beat them. We need to do the right things. Yes. We need to approach things in the right way. Let's not waste money. And the biggest thing is that, all the drivers that get the cars are happy with them. They feel quick out of the box, and you get that response of, oh, it's great. I build it up. I run it. It's good. I'm rambling on a bit, but that's kind of the gist of it. I think I might have answered the question in there somewhere.
I can't remember what the question was now, Trish.
It's
all great to hear, because it's kind of an opinion of someone who's in the industry from a side that the kind of the racer doesn't really see. So obviously they buy these products, they go to the shop and they buy these products and they build them and they go through the manual and things, but they don't really know what goes into creating the product that they've just bought. So, I mean, I think things that are overlooked are things like the manual. And I can imagine something like that would take you a long time to complete, actually. So you design the car and you have to make sure everything fits together, but then you obviously have to tell someone how to build it. So it must be quite a big process to kind of go from start to finish on a product.
Well, that's it. So if I'm welcome to talk about that, basically it's a case of we've got the previous car, we need a new car. So normally by this point, you've worked out what you want anyway, because you know what you haven't got from the car over the year. It could do of having this position. It could do of being a bit better on this surface. So you know your development program, things to try. So you do like a feasibility part of it. And then you go, once you're happy with that, sign things off, maybe run it in public, but without people knowing. Obviously, testing these things, we're happy in high competition, not just testing a track, kind of ragging it around with no pressure. Yeah. We then obviously test it to the highest level, and then go into production with it. Once I've said to Robin, do you know what, this is good. This is what I believe in. And I go through it, and he's learned to trust me over time. And now we can, and then we get it into production. But to get it into production, yeah, it's a whole host of things. You've got to work out what's going to be in the kit. You've also got to draw the parts, and you've got to order them. You've got to get them in from suppliers at all, kind of like a good time that we can release it, at the date that you want to release it. And sometimes you end up releasing it in April, but you would have loved to have had it in December. You don't get to choose these things necessarily. Things don't work out in this kind of, it'd be nice if we released a new car every October. Well, that would be great, wouldn't it? If we had about 20 more staff focusing just on this one brand, a part of the project. But that's fine. So we work really hard. I think it's 26 staff in the company, and everyone does their bit. And they all do a great job. Really, really do a great job. My boss does a massive part of it. I don't do the modelling for the car. I do the feasibility part, and then I pass it over. Right, needs to get done, and then I carry on with the next bit. And so someone else gets involved with that bit. So there's a lot of people involved. There's people that do the procurement, and there's a big process to that. And once that's done, obviously everything has to get bagged. It doesn't just come from China in a bag or ready to go. Like some of the other companies, they utilise Chinese packaging to get things done, whereas we do it in-house. We have humans in the UK doing a fantastic job within the company putting these things together. And sometimes someone's missing a washer, they get on Facebook and they complain about it, and it's like, come on, we can deal with that. Don't just complain. This is British manufacturing here. We're getting a product out, and there's probably a lot of people that voted leave and they're complaining about some of like the British product that's out there, and it's like, come on, support us, help us, we'll do a great product for you, just go for it.
And what a lot of customers don't realize is when they buy something from someone like yourselves or from any other distribution company that based in this country, they're always there to help. The customer service is kind of the forefront of what you guys do and what other brands do and other distribution centers. And all it takes is a phone call or an email to say the kind of the problem you've got, and then there's always someone at the other end of the phone to, or the other end of the computer to respond and kind of help out as best they possibly can. And like you say, you make a lot of stuff in-house, and you're there to kind of give all the support. You're all racers, you've got the knowledge there.
That's,
and you've
the
got
enjoyable
the
part.
Staff to you've got the staff to kind of help out. So yeah, it's quite nice really to see a brand like yourself kind of keep pushing forward and keep developing new things.
Well, yeah. one of the nice things, if I could just add something really quickly.
Yes, please.
The nicest thing is when you do see people having a nice time with the product, and when they are struggling, you can help them. And by the end of it, if you've done your job well, they're happy. And that's quite satisfying. Well, it's really satisfying. It's probably the best part of the job, actually. Not to get all cliche about it, but it's that smile at the end of the day. And you're like, I've helped a lot of people here, and I don't always race four-wheel drive. I don't do it at nationals because I get to help more people. And you sometimes come away from the day, I might have made a B final today, best result in a while. But it's actually a nicer feeling when you guys have done well and they tell you that it's good and thanks for the help. And you think, wow, that's actually quite a satisfying feeling.
Yeah, yeah. Especially to see a product that you've created and designed yourself kind of out there in mass production and run by a lot of people. It must be quite an amazing feeling, actually, to see something that you've created out there with a wider audience.
You get a certain feeling that you can't replicate doing anything else. This combined feeling of you've spent a year in developing something, it's getting into production, it's out there. Like when we got third at the Worlds, chuffed a bits with that. When we won the first EOS at Dawn with the L1 prototype, that was really satisfying. No one has touched X-Ray. And then we were able to come along with a car that I've made bits of my garage on the machines that I've got myself. And we went out there and we beat them. That was, you know, stunning. And it made me so proud, watching Michael at the time, just going, you know, him and Bruno battling it out. And it was dreamy, really dreamy. I couldn't stop smiling inside and popping outside here. And I was just chuffed to bits. Nice.
Yeah, rightly so.
I was wondering, kind of leads on to this question of, obviously you can't talk about anything. I'd imagine that you're kind of developing perhaps for the future, but how long does it take to create a product? So a product you've already released, for example, the KC or the Laydown, how long does it take from the initial kind of idea, this is what we want to do, to creating prototypes, to create testing, to then deciding to put it into production, and then actually getting the finished item ready to ship to shops and to customers? How long is the entire process?
That's a really tough one to answer because it varies. Let's say you had an evolution-based car and all you've done is put some updates on it from the car before. It's a case of ordering parts, updating a manual and stuff like that. So there's still, for example, 6 months involved with that part of its update. But the bit that extends the time is how much do you want to put into the feasibility of the better car? And so that could take a year. Like the L1, I spent a year working on that with Phil Booth. And then when Michael came along, he had little goes of it towards the end once I'd put a lot of work in with it. But there was like the Laydown. I think I started that January, came back from the Reedy, said, Robin, we need a car that actually has grip on the surface because the KC struggled. And so I started in January and I gave it to him in June because I wanted this car to come out. It ended up being released in April due to, I think we had our Top Cat came out. That came in, and so that pushed the project back a bit because of various other things. All these little things can come into play that actually push bits back. We're a small company and there's only so many guys doing things. So we're really hard to try and get it done. And you've got to do it in a timely manner, but that also fits in time with the other things going on. So suddenly you can't just have three projects trying to be done at the same time. You just gotta, it's all about just trying to get some good planning in and getting it done. So yeah, it could be between 6 months and 2 years. Like the MI7, if you watched the video last night, Facebook Live video, that was towards a year and a half to 2 years from start to now launch. Things happen to change in the project and various things. And so it's not clear cut. Even if you just order the same thing again, you've still got to wait a certain amount of time for bits to come in.
That's really, really interesting. I mean, I'm sure that the listeners to the show will find it as certainly as interesting as I do. And I'm sure as you have, Alexander, is to hear the other side of the coin of when you pick up that box and you've got that kit and you think, right, I've got to build it, appreciating all the work that goes into it. I think just something I'd like to just rewind slightly on, and that's just something that I think is important. And that is when you talk about the guys working and girls at Schumacher on all of this, is that when you buy a Schumacher car, you are supporting real people that work in this country who are bagging those products up. I feel quite, I think that's quite important to me If you see what I'm driving at, is that, you know, that's a real person with a real family and a real job, a house to pay for and groceries, that's bagging those products. So buying Schumacher, when you say about, oh, support British, you really are supporting a British company. And it's I'm obviously older than the pair of you. So going back to 85 without, you know, laboring the point and everyone falling asleep, is just that Schumacher's one of the great names for me. And I remember the Ball Diff and the Cat XLS and where that's all come from. So for me to see that company still prospering today really is a fantastic thing. And it means an awful lot to me. So I think it's fantastic hearing everything you've got to say about it. And it also gave us an insight to how those processes are worked through. So no doubt there'll obviously be things going on now with the two-wheel drive lay down and the four-wheel drive L1 looking to the future, which is always, like I started this all off, this section is something that I find very exciting, always looking for the next advantage and winning. So it's interesting that obviously that you being in the development, do you feel any pressure when you race that people obviously want to try and get one over on you?
I think when I first joined the company, I felt it the most. I felt like, oh, I've got something to prove now. There's nothing stopping. Because you've now got a little bit more access to product because you're there to support the company a bit more. So you get supported by the company a bit more. And so then, it took me quite a few years. And I'd kind of started accepting where I'm going to be. And I made my first A final a couple of years ago. I just kind of thought I'll be where I am. I'll try and put an extra bit of time in where I can. But because you're living it day and night, you know, I get a lot of messages in the evenings from people. I've also got the passion behind it, so I want to be involved and I'm looking up things. And then you're there all day doing it, and then you're racing national, and you can get a bit raced out. Yes. Maybe some people wouldn't. Maybe I'm not built the same way as some other people. So I got to that point that, you know, you just accept that, yeah, fine, this guy's beating me, and well done to you. And you just go down this route of just, you support them and you're happy for them. And sometimes, because you've now got the knowledge that you also know a little bit more than the other person on how to set a car, you're telling them how to beat you. And when they're asking for advice, and you're like, oh, but it's just one of those things. And they go and beat you, and you're just like, darn it. But fine, that's what I'm here for. I'm not here. I'm not racing for the company. I'm here representing the company and getting the best out of our races. So the pressure is there. Even though I go to a Tuesday night, like we talked about before, you feel a certain amount of pressure that you need to be at a certain standard, and you don't look silly, and you can't go and lose your rag because you look bad. You need to be maintaining your cool. You can't come off grumpy. Sometimes you do have to tell that racer that he took you out. You know, it's kind of, you're going to be honest with him, but it's kind of like, well, I don't want to make Schumacher look bad, but this guy took me out. That was wrong. Yes. And he's telling me that it's a 50-50. No, it wasn't. You go through that. So it's a constant evolution of state of mind, you know, when you're just adapting to situation, how things should be. Yes. Yeah, so there's a bit of pressure.
Thanks for
but,
that. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for that insight there. I mean, Hayward has that issue now, of course.
Oh, yes.
But he is so vindictive. I've heard him giving out incorrect advice continually to youngsters. I heard him telling some 8-year-old the other day that he had to run his motor backwards, I think, on the speed. plug that speedo in backwards. That will give you extra power. And when the child went home crying, he was laughing. That's the kind of man you're dealing with.
Anything to win.
Anything to win, the butcher. So yeah, I mean, that's really, really great. And obviously you also have the Trish Bits channel on YouTube. Yes. Don't you, Trish? So perhaps you'd like to expand on that a little.
Yeah, it's something I've always wanted to do. I watch a lot of YouTube. I've signed up their premium one and getting rid of my Sky and spending the money on that. There's a lot of people that do machining on there. I follow a number of different people. It's one thing I'm interested in. And I was always doing it. And I was talking to Magda, and she was always saying to me, you're talking about this in a way that you love it. And you're talking about these people that do it. And she'd watched some of them, their ones with me, and was kind of like, you could do this and you could probably do it better. And I was like, well, I don't know about that. You know, it's like when someone encourages you, you think you can't do anything. Yes. So then I just thought, well, let's do something, start recording bits, have some fun with it. And I'm really enjoying myself. I've been putting up some videos recently. There's some stuff to do with racing. So I did a soldering video. I did a diff building one that went up. And which has been a really good reception.
Yes.
And basically, I need people to subscribe and just give me that encouragement by every time I get a new subscriber, it's enjoyable. When I get a bunch, it's like, I want to do another video. I want to get out there. I want to give people information. I want to have some fun with this. It's enjoyable being creative, not just making something, but doing the editing process, capturing, speaking to people. I enjoy teaching. So you can encompass all of that in one of these videos.
I think that comes across quite well. So on that point of subscribing, can you tell the listeners where they can find you?
Okay, so yeah, go on YouTube. Obviously, you can just watch the video. You don't have to subscribe, but it helps if you subscribe because it means you can like, you can comment, and you can follow. You won't miss out on future information. So just type in Trish Bits. You'll find it, and I'll have content related to me having fun doing my machining, but you also have content related to the cars, and I want to introduce more and more. With requests, I'll talk about different topics that will help people. So have a little look, enjoy it, and yeah, comment, and just share it with everyone. I want to try and educate more people about what we're doing and what to watch out for. There's a lot of stuff out there, and some of it's good, and some of it's not super helpful. And so I want to try and be one of the helpful ones and work towards being helpful. So I just need feedback. Go from there.
Great. So Trish Bits on YouTube, subscribe people. And I've obviously watched quite a few of the videos. Now, just I'm not meaning to ambush you whatsoever, and don't panic. On your latest gear diff building video, I think you've got a comment that I looked at on YouTube from, it may have been from Glenn Downer, asking you to do a ball diff one. Now that's actually, I know ball diffs well, but the V2 ball diff is somewhat new to me. And Phil Slay has helped me out a lot on those. And I would like to just add my tuppence, and that is I personally would love you to do a ball diff video for the new V3 Schumacher ball diff and the V2. Because the V3, I understand, but the V2 would mean a lot to me because Phil Slay, as I say, has helped me out and done a great job for me. But I like to obviously do it myself for myself and Abe. So that's my tuppence. So good shout out there,
Glenn.
I've
written it down a bit
one.
Of paper.
That's good. That's good. And so that's Trish Bits. And anybody out there who has a sweet tooth, there is a video for Polish apple pie. Haven't I got that correct? From the lovely Magda, as she shall be henceforth known on the show. The lovely Magda has done a Polish apple pie traditional recipe I have several times now placed in front of Mrs. Lyons's eyes and said, please watch this video. Please watch this video. I've caught her at
all the wrong time.
So I will get her at the right time. So, Hayward, perhaps you ought to watch it and treat Amy, perhaps.
Yes, possibly. Yeah.
I think I've ambushed him there, I think, Trish.
I do bake on occasion, Pete. Bake on occasion.
He's sweating now that he's going to have to do some cooking in the kitchen that doesn't involve Bombay mix and nuts.
Or cereal.
Or cereal. Yeah. Something prepackaged soup. And sausages in the pan at the Nationals. So just to round off this section, you've been a superb guest, Trish, and I really hope that the listeners get as much from it as I think Alexandra and I have. We've really enjoyed having you on.
It's been a pleasure.
People who know you will know that you are, as we start off by saying, Tony Stark and Elon Musk to be, limits none, shall we say. And so you're a big Marvel fan, as am I.
A movie Marvel fan. I'm not massively
not,
versed
not
on
comics.
The comic side of
comics,
it. Yes.
Yes.
So
yeah,
Peter's created a comic quiz.
I've created a comic quiz. No, I'm very much a movie buff in general, as long-time listeners to the show will know. I know I love music and films. Something Hayward knows nothing about. but he has other areas of expertise, I shall say, in his defense. But we've got a Marvel quiz for you. So, okay. Well, this is for you and Hayward. So let's see. It's all for fun. So don't worry about getting things right or wrong. It's multiple choice. Let's see how we do. So we have 10 questions. Pete, the listeners to the show can join in and see how many they get right. So let's see how much you know about Marvel superheroes. So question number one, who is Ben Reilly? Is he the scientist who created Captain America, the editor at the Daily Bugle, Iron Man's father, or Spider-Man's clone?
I'm going to give it Spider-Man's clone, or it's the editor, but it's definitely not, obviously, the scientist, because he was German, a German name. And it definitely wasn't. Yeah, no, I'm going to go for Spider-Man's clone, because I've never heard of Ben Reilly before.
Spider-Man's clone. Are you with Tristram on that answer, Alexander Hayward?
Yeah, what Trish said.
That's basically going to be your answer for the next 10 questions, isn't it?
Basically, yes.
Yes, what Trish said. Okay. So on to question two. Which of these heroes is the oldest in age?
Okay.
Spider-Man, Wolverine, Mr. Fantastic, or Iron Man?
It would be Wolverine.
Alexander, you concur?
Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah, I think that's a good shout, actually. Who is A-Bomb? Steve Rogers, Rick Jones, Bruce Banner, Tony Stark?
Rick Jones.
Okay. In the graphic novel, sorry, this must be a graphic, but you could probably get this one. In the graphic novel Old Man Logan, which one of the heroes has gone blind? Spider-Man, Wolverine, Hawkeye, or Iron Man?
I have no idea. I'm going to go for... So, what's the list again?
Spider-Man, Wolverine, Hawkeye, or Iron Man. We missed an Office reference there, isn't it?
Always the same.
Do you want the options again? Always the same. Spider-Man, Wolverine, Hawkeye, or Iron Man.
And what was the name of the title again?
The graphic novel was Old Man Logan. Which one of the superheroes has gone blind? Spider-Man?
Let's go for Wolverine, then.
Wolverine, okay.
Let's go for Wolverine. Because it's Logan, that's his name. I'm assuming maybe he went blind during it. I never saw anything where he worked with Iron Man on anything. Maybe Spider-Man, because Spider-Man got involved with the X-Men from time to time. So you could say Spider-Man. So maybe I get half a point for that one. I haven't. On the other ones, I think it's just Spider-Man and Wolverine as the two options.
Yes.
Maybe just go for Spider-Man on a hunch, just...
Let's go with Spider-Man.
Yeah, let's
then.
Just go for it.
Okay, we're question five now, so halfway through. This one, you'll get this, I'm sure you will. Actually, the next two, I'm sure you'll get. James Rhodes is which superhero?
He's
Doctor Strange, Captain America, The Vision, or War Machine?
War Machine, sorry, not Iron Warrior. Fine. War Machine.
Yes, War Machine.
I don't know why I call him Iron Warrior, but...
Iron Warrior. I think you've not only created amazing cards, you've now created a new superhero. So I think...
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's do especially the name of the next comic. Iron Warrior. That's great. That could become a growing hashtag, that could be. New Schumacher 2 will drop Iron Warrior.
It's actually really heavy, unfortunately. That's why we call it Iron Warrior. It's actually quite cheap material to use, so we stuck with it.
Yeah, Iron. Yeah. Certainly not going to have any problem on the BRCA scales, are you?
They'll break those 30-year-old Midwest ones that we use.
Yeah, you fit it in the box, put it on the scales, goes through the table, the old style table. What was it? The old wallpaper table.
Two people to be carrying it to the table first. It's that bad.
Yeah, that's it. The BRCA scales, I'm afraid, Mr. Worsley. Are dead.
You'd be running a 2.5 motor in it just to get it going.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I've got to charge to 8.5 though to get it going. Who crippled Charles Xavier? Juggernaut?
Oh, that's Magneto.
Shago King? Yes, Lucifer or Magneto? Yes,
yeah, well,
Magneto.
It was through the incident. It was his fault anyway.
Correct. Yes, Magneto.
Put it on the spine.
played by one of my favourite actors, whose name actually I now can't remember.
I would have had it as well, because I love the pair of them.
Yes. Obviously, Ian McKellen is original Magneto.
Yes.
But new Magneto is, crikey, he's in Prometheus and, what's his name? What's his name? Everyone's shouting at me at home.
I'm typing in on Google.
He's not your favourite actor of all time, though, is he, Pete? Who is your favourite actor of all time?
What's his? Sidney Poitier. No, David... I was going to say David Hasselhoff. It's not David Hasselhoff. What is it? David... he plays David, doesn't he?
Michael Fassbender.
Michael Fassbender. Sorry, I'm normally so good with these things.
Fassbender. I said Fassbender, didn't I?
Fassbender, he's brilliant in the Tarantino film as well, but the particular scene that always calls to mind in X-Men First Class, I think, is when he goes to the place in Argentina. That's an absolutely amazing scene, I think. Question 7. Mm. Which hero becomes the Deadly Phoenix? Jean Grey?
It's Jean.
Jean, Shadow Cat, Rogue, Ms. Marvel. Obviously, I think I'm pretty sure that's Jean Grey, isn't it? Yes. Now, here's a good one. Question 8. Which member of the X-Men can walk through walls? Remy LeBeau, Kitty Pryde, Scott Summers, or Jean Grey?
Be one of the first two, but I can't think. It's not Scott or Jean.
Remy LeBeau, Kitty Pryde.
I'm just getting Kitty Pryde. I don't actually know.
Now, this is so easy, this one. Question, maybe Alexander can answer this one. So, question 9, who is Carol Danvers? Storm, Invisible Woman, Shadow Cat, or Ms. Marvel?
Trish, any ideas?
Brie Larson.
Correct.
Yeah, this is a team effort, so I'd like to think that was...
Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel.
I absolutely
love
that movie. She's so bloody kick-ass without using any swear words.
It's the original, though, was she? Because the original Captain Marvel wasn't a woman, unless I'm very much mistaken. I think changed.
In the books.
Although it's changed twice.
Yeah, but you look in the books, they've got it. Yeah, you've got it in the books. They've got both types. I've got a big book with all of them in, and they've covered a lot of it.
Yes. I think it changed a couple of times. So that's as much. So yes, Hayward, you got one there.
Yes.
Now here's one that I don't actually know. Spider-Man. Question 10. Spider-Man. We love Spidey. Dons a new suit that enhances his spider sense in which comic book series? Secret War, Secret Invasion, Marvel Zombies, or Civil War?
Go Civil War.
Okay. By the way, have you seen Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, I think it is? Have you seen
that? No, I want to watch it. That's the one I haven't seen yet.
It's absolutely brilliant.
Great.
It's animated, but you'll forget it's animated.
No, I'm more
superb. It's superb. Yeah. But it's absolutely superb. I saw it had 5 stars. I'm not surprised. It is really, really superb. Calling it, if you like a cartoon or if it, not yourself, but anybody, animation, it really does it down because it's so much better than that. So, yes, let's go through. Question 1, who is Ben Reilly, Spider-Man's clone? Correct.
Okay.
So, the Jackal made clones of Spider-Man. Most of them were disfigured in some way.
Oh.
But Ben Reilly was an almost perfect clone. Peter is convinced that Ben is the real Spider-Man, that he himself is a clone. So he lets Ben take over the mantle of Spider-Man. Right. 55% of players actually only ever answered that correctly, so well done. Which of these heroes is oldest in age? You answered Wolverine. That is correct. Wolverine has lived for a very long time, more than 60 years at least. His memories have been tampered with.
Yeah, because he was around
before World War I. Yes, World War. That's right. Yeah. His memories have been tampered with, so there's no way to know for sure. His healing factor has helped him keep alive so long. Okay. Who is A-Bomb? Rick Jones. Correct. Rick Jones gained his powers through gamma radiation. Like the Hulk, he can transform himself into a huge creature if agitated. That makes me think of you somewhat and your amazing workshop. Whatever you do, Trish, I know you're like upgrading things. Don't go exposing yourself to gamma radiation.
Yeah, I do avoid it from time. There are moments that I get close to it, but
I'm imagining you like in some sort of mad scientist type thing, like in what would it be? Something like have you seen? That Guillermo del Toro film with the huge monsters in, where those two great actors, it's Charlie Day, I think, and the other chap play absolutely crazy scientists. Don't go doing that, exposing yourself to gamma radiation. Yes, yeah. Definitely give that a miss. So question four, in the graphic novel Old Man Logan, which one of the heroes has gone blind? Spider-Man.
I think I got this one wrong.
It is wrong. The correct answer is Hawkeye.
Yep. Oh, okay.
Hawkeye may have become blind, but he can still locate enemies by the sounds they make. Animals. That was like my Trish O'Neill yesterday. That's another. Yeah, Trish. Okay. Trish O'Neill. Question five. James Rhodes is which superhero? Answered War Machine, correct. James Rhodes uses one of Iron Man's suits to become War Machine. Tony lets James use the suit. Ian even lets James fill in for him when Tony is on a long leave of absence. Now, here's a really interesting one. Who crippled Charles Xavier? Your answer, Magneto. Ooh, incorrect.
He deflected the bullet and it took him.
So it says the correct answer is Lucifer.
Okay.
Professor X stopped the alien Lucifer from conquering the world. Lucifer repaid him by dropping a giant stone on his back, as you do, crushing his legs. Only 20% have answered that correctly. So I wonder, is that in the comics and the movie isn't canon?
Yeah, mine's movie trivia answer.
Yes.
Whereas yours is true comic.
So, yeah, well, we'll ignore that one then. We'll ignore that one.
I'm well versed now on that one from yourself.
But you see, now that might be a pub quiz question. Get right. So, yes. So,
Lucifer.
Which hero becomes the Deadly Phoenix? Answer, Jean Grey. Correct. The Phoenix is a dark presence that lives inside Jean. If she lets her emotions get out of control, it takes her over. Okay. Mm. Question eight. Which one of the X-Men can walk through walls? You answered Kitty Pryde. Correct. Kitty Pryde, aka Shadow Cats. Yes.
Yeah, I didn't see any guys go through walls, and I seem to think it's a girl, and they don't normally do that with guys. They give the film was more like elegant powers in those kind of things, what they're going to do with those movies.
It says correct. That has the she has the ability to phase through anything, even people. Mm. Carol Danvers, quite correct. Ms. Marvel.
Mm.
And Spider-Man, you got this one correct as well. Civil War.
Okay.
He dons a suit that enhances his spider sense in which comic book series? You answered Civil War.
Mm.
Tony Stark makes Spider-Man a new suit. The suit enhances all of Peter's abilities. Peter ditches the suit after he leaves the pro-registration forces. Stark planted a failsafe in the costume, but Peter learned about it and removed it. Mm. So you scored 8 out of 10.
That's pretty good.
The average score for that quiz is 6. So above average there. Yeah. Yes. Plus 2.
Okay. Average plus.
Average plus there. So that really was fantastic. So that really wraps it up until we speak to Dom in just a moment. So thanks ever so much for joining us, Trish.
It's been a pleasure. Really enjoyed myself. Yeah,
I've really, really enjoyed it. I know you have as well, haven't you, Alexander? You were telling me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's been fantastic having you on. We'll definitely have you on again if you'll be so good to join us.
I would love to.
I hope every one of our listeners out there around the UK and around the globe have enjoyed listening to you as well. It's been fantastic. Thanks ever so much.
Thank you. Speak to you soon.
So, Dom, just moving to you in this section of the show. People forget that you're actually quite a young man because you're about, 7 foot tall. But how did you first get into RC? Take us back to the beginning.
Actually, my granddad bought me my my first RC car. It was a Nanda BD8. It was like an RTR ready to run 8 scale.
Okay. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
It was absolutely brilliant. He got it for me for Christmas. It was like a mix, like a Christmas and birthday. Just started tearing it around some fields and bits and bobs like that. It was brilliant. And then we started going to a club called Stoke Nitro, which it was just a brilliant Astro 8-scale track. I remember just turning up there one Thursday night with this buggy, and they have like race evenings as well as some nights if they don't have enough. They had like free practice, and it was just brilliant, just having to go around a track and everything like that. And we soon broke bits, obviously, with jumps and obviously being really new to it and not really having much control.
Yes.
And then it kind of just went from there. Like, we carried on doing the Thursday nights, and then started doing club races there like once a month. And then it like progressed into national series and like that. And it was all 8-scale. And then later on, I got into 10th-scale, and it was, brilliant.
Oh, well, yeah. So when was it you went into the 10th then, Dom, from the 8th? When did you first have a 10th-scale car?
So my first 10th-scale car was like this Tamiya, I can't remember what it was called. It was a Tamiya, and it had a little person in it. It was brilliant.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but
you can't see that now, yeah? The person in the car one.
Did you have a person in your Schumacher laydown at all? Like a little pilot almost, or a driver?
But I'm thinking I've got to do it. We've got some upstairs in the warehouse, yeah. I think, so I may have to grab some.
Absolutely.
That's like when you're in France racing RC, isn't it? And it says pilot.
Pilot. Yeah.
I feel, pilots. Oh. I feel like, you know, crikey, here I am, fighter pilot. No, it's RC car driver, actually. Pray, stay on, Dom. Stay on. Continue with your story about 10th scale and little people.
So, like, I mean, properly, like, starting racing, like, I probably started when I was 12. Yeah, I must have been like about 12. But in terms of 10th scale, towards 15. I think I started racing at Stoke. They've got an indoor track in Stoke. On Timerfield. And I started racing there with a Schumacher. I don't know what buggy it was. It was a Schumacher that Dad bought off eBay, and just used to race that and not do very well with it, but I just put it on the track, and it was practice once a week. And then it just started getting bigger. I stopped going for a while and just kind of did 8th scale again. And then I got back into the 10th side of it, when I was doing my GCSEs, and I started doing the regional series, and I just turned up at Oswestry, and made the A final at a regional, and I didn't really know anybody there. It was my first regional, didn't know anybody, and just then it kind of was like, oh, I'm all right at this 10th scale stuff, I could do more of it. But I was only doing four-wheel drive.
Can't say fairer than that.
No, I was only doing four-wheel drive, so like the first time I drove like a proper two-wheel drive buggy was at the junior and vets national that year, Paul Robson won it, and that was a really fun event, like, especially as a junior. That was a great event. And then the F3s, 4s and 5s did that as well.
Yeah, so originally 10th scale was to kind of supplement your nitro program, so obviously you were more of a nitro driver, an 8th scale buggy driver, but then you did the 10th scale, you say, in Stoke, just really as practice, was it? Just purely through the winter and through the evenings and the week?
Yeah, it was just through evenings and week, at the week and over the throughout the winter.
Yeah, because there's not much nitro that goes on over the winter, is there, as far as I know? I think it's a lot of it during the summer, but the nitro seems to quieten off a lot through the winter months.
Yeah, it really does. It didn't, from what I remember, it wasn't as quiet because obviously I was quite local to an Astro track. There was a meeting on once a month, or every couple of weeks there. So there was always racing throughout the winter, and I always remember like cold mornings and
and all that throughout the winter and that at Stoke, or like when like races have been rained off and bits like that. Stoke was one of those tracks of, it was just a brilliant track and there was nothing really bad about it. I loved it. I'm really sad that it kind of, it's now a parking lot.
That's a shame.
I think they had a few tenth scale races on there and bits and bobs over the years, but not much.
That's interesting. What I find one of the interesting things from the many times we've spoken about things, Dom, is that lots of people obviously associate you with the 1/8 scale, but you told me that 1/10 is actually your preferred class, correct?
Well, it is because I can do more of it. It's 8th scale is obviously it's the stuff I started with and everything like that, but it's one of those classes when you're doing it, it's absolutely fantastic. But you need a pit man and you need somebody to help you tune your engine. You need all that stuff around you when you're learning. So if I'm off practicing on my own or I'm off practicing and dad isn't there, it is a real struggle to do nitro. Nitro racing. But so that's where temp scale took over a lot more as well, because I could get out and practice. My sister could drive me to the track. My mum could take me. And that really helped. And that obviously got me faster and being able to practice more. And that's where I think just the love of tenth scale really grew from.
Yeah. Yes. I think that's one of the things is accessibility. Because when I started many moons ago in 1985, obviously I went to the track on my own, got a lift with my mate who did it, you know, clockwork wind-up chargers with SCRs and things like that. It is accessible to... I was 12 when I started. Probably similar to yourself when you went with your dad, Alexander. And Nitro has a lot more around it that you need assistance with. So I think it's maybe not quite as easy for a youngster to get into. That being said, for example, when I was talking about Nitro to Johnny Skidmore up at Worksop last weekend, he was saying how much he loved it. And he thinks it's fantastic, the tracks and everything, and you can see his enthusiasm for it. And of course, when we talk about the legend that his dad mentioned for our listeners on the show, that of course is Mr. Brendan Nunn, who is always a nice face to see trackside. Amazingly, he's very calm and chilled. I don't know how he manages it sometimes. Obviously, my own experience with Abe racing, and I feel like spinning around on the spot like Chris Cocker and stuff. obviously, yourself and your dad are a good team on the 8th side of things, and he's your pit man for all of that, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He's brilliant. He's fantastic. It's funny. I mean, me and dad this past like 2 years we've been really out of practice with the 8th scale and everything, but it's just been the 8th scale has just been fun. It's a fun weekend once a month to do. It's brilliant. I really wouldn't be in the pace that I am without him, and it's crazy.
Well, you're a good team, and obviously I saw you both. We were pitting next to each other at Worksop the other weekend, which was a lot of fun. And obviously it was busy because you were doing both classes, and Abe was doing four-wheel and I was doing two-wheel. So that was a little bit more calm than if we were doing both classes each. And Worksop somewhere that I keep going on and on and on at Alexander to get himself up to, which he may well do one day, won't you, I think?
I will. Yeah, I'll try to.
Yes. So... that was a lot of fun. And of course, now working on the development team at Schumacher Racing in Northampton, are you not?
Yes, I am.
Yes, so is there anything you can tell us about that role, other than that you're fantastically happy doing it, no doubt?
I can't, really, apart from it's a fantastic...
So what are you trying to say, Dom? You're not going to tell us about all the new products you've got in the pipeline that are going to come out towards the end of this year or next year?
Quiet. Unbelievable.
Quiet. Why have we got you on this show?
quiet. No, that's fair enough. But we you are obviously on the development team. Sorry, Dom, were you going to say something just then?
No, no.
His lips are sealed.
That's fair enough. So yeah, I mean, it's been great having you on, Dom, with Trish. Great talent at Schumacher for 2020 with yourself, Paul Crompton, Tom Cockerell making a return, obviously Lloyd, Aidan Burke has joined, shout out to Aidan, and Big Bear Martin Owen as well. And talking of worksop, I wanted to say a massive well done to Ben Smith for his worksop win in two-wheel drive, which I thought was a fantastic achievement. I know Simon was ever so excited. Well done to him. And well done to the Halls as well, who also did a spiffing job. Now, where have you been racing anywhere recently, Hayward? Dudley Worlds, wasn't it you were mentioning?
Yeah, Dudley Worlds on Sunday last week. And then I did the Silverstone Winter Series on Saturday, the day before.
Yes.
Two very different services, but both enjoyable days, both long days. But I was happy with both results. A respectable 15th in Silverstone. And a podium, my first ever podium at the Dudley Worlds.
Podium.
I am the vice champion.
You podiumed.
I podiumed.
And what were your results at Worksop, Dom?
We don't need to talk about this.
You didn't do that badly. You had some of your usual very, very fast moments, I think. But I think you did all right. You got in the B final, I thought, in two-wheel drive, didn't you?
Yeah, but it was okay. It just wasn't my weekend and all that, all those bits.
No, I mean, exactly. And I know that also with the cars, some of it you're quite new. You're still really relatively quite new because we were looking at setups and your dad was looking at setups with the cars. So we know you'll get it there. So just wanted to say thank you ever so much for you coming on the show. We'll definitely have you on again. It's lovely to have you on, Dom. You know that I'm a big fan of you and your dad.
So where can we see you, Dom, racing then this winter? Have you got much more planned then? So you're doing Worksop series. I'm guessing you're doing Silverstone as well. I think you were there when I was there actually on the Saturday.
Yeah, so we'll be doing all the Silverstone series. I'll be doing the Worksop series, a few of the MAMs.
Yeah.
And the Hearts Winter series.
Oh, good stuff. The outdoor 10th.
No, 8 scale.
Oh, the 8 scale. Oh, okay.
It's easy to forget that, isn't it? Yes, we've got two phenomenal passes. 8th track there as well, as Darren working very hard on the 10th scale track. That's great,
it's
Dom.
It's good, though, isn't it?
It is. And I think they've got big plans. So it's really good to see how much Darren Windsor is doing down there. It's always great to see Darren and his dad. I'm a big fan of his dad, Andy. I don't see him enough. He used to race. He pops up every now and again. It's always really good to see him. That sounds like a really good winter series season of racing that you're doing. So I'd just like to say thank you to my sponsors, which is Schumacher Racing, Dash, and of course New Concept that you know all about, Dom, along with God RC. Would you like to say thank you to anyone, Alexander?
Absolutely. Thank you to CML Distribution and CML Racing for the help and support they've given to me as I've now started a new stage in my career working for them.
New chapter.
So I'll be running all their equipment for this year. A new chapter.
In other news, I've been promoted.
I've been promoted.
There's good news and irrelevant news. You're still thinking about the bad news, aren't you?
Thank you to CML Racing and all those guys there.
Yes. Thank you ever so much for joining us, Dom. Thank you, listeners, for listening in. We'll have another show for you soon. Got some ideas about some other things we want to talk about and other guests. And if you like it, please share it around, let your friends know, like it, share it, et cetera, all the usual. And thank you for listening. We will catch you very soon. Goodbye.
Cheers.